Welcome to Spiritually Fierce, the podcast. I am your host, Dr. Ricky Jane Adams, principal and founder of the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence and creator of the Spiritually Fierce movement. Spiritually Fierce is not just a phrase. It is a movement of awakening consciousness of which we are all a part, if we want to be. In each episode, we'll explore what it means to be spiritually fierce, how to become it, and why it is the revolution in consciousness that will save the world. Join me and my fierce guests for deep conversations on spirituality beyond the trinkets and superstitions of the new age that will support you to increase your power to serve. Welcome everybody to Spiritually Fierce, the podcast, and I am joined today by astrologer and scientist, friend and former student, Kelly Gunter, who is going to take us on an exploration of astrology, but not as you know it. And I adore this woman. I adore her work. I'm going to read you her formal bio because she's very impressive and it makes her feel awkward and uncomfortable. So while she has to listen to how amazing she is. So Kelly is both a scientist and astrologer on a mission to reunite humanity with our ecological and cosmological selves, igniting awe and imagination and creating our new vision for Earth together. Humans have been gazing at the planets and stars for thousands, if not millions of years. Just as the moon pulls on our body's waters and the sun dictates our circadian rhythm, the movement of the planets are reflective of both the cycles on Earth and the changes within each of us. Kelly has previously worked as a contaminated land practitioner for over 20 years, at the same time she was learning and practicing astrology. Kelly has also trained as an intuitive intelligence trainer and yoga teacher. She uses 13 sign, now I've forgotten, I totally asked you for pronunciation of sidereal astrology, which is observational astrology and matches what we can see in the sky, which I'm guessing is not what tropical or Western astrology does. So we're going to learn more about that. Kelly believes we need to observe our environment, including the planets and stars, to come back into connection with it. Modern mainstream Western astrology does not correlate to what can be seen in the sky. Dong, dong, dong. Oh my goodness. And I totally, you blow my mind, like every month it's like full moon in or new moon in. And so often it's not what all of the Western astrologers are saying. We're going to just go backwards a little bit from that, my darling. I'm so happy to have you here. We have been hanging out for a long time and that makes me very happy. Tell me where your journey began, wherever you want to start.
I think it began when I was 14, yeah. When... the Exxon Valdez ran aground, and people are probably thinking, why is she talking about an oil tanker running aground in 1989? That's where I realized the environment was in trouble. Yeah. Because we were seeing a lot of oil spills at that in that period of time, because there was a lot of tankers running around the world, right? And I was on a mission at that point to become an environmental scientist. At 14, I knew. Wow. But what's interesting at that point in my life, I was also questioning Catholicism, which is what I was raised under. Yeah. And I was looking at the environment and I was going, why aren't trees God? We can't control the trees. We can't control the sun. We can't control the water. We can't control the weather. And if you remove any of those things, we die. Yeah. And so this very 14-year-old brain of mine was like, well, why isn't that God? Why am I sitting here listening to some dude in a church, being made to by my grandmother at that point? And people aren't worshipping this planet. So it was at 14 that I went down the pathway of witchcraft and paganism and getting connected in with a much more earth-based practice at that point, and, of course, ended up becoming an environmental scientist. And the same year that I got my first job as an environmental scientist, I started studying astrology quite weirdly. It's like, wow. Moved out of home, got my first job in 1999. Back then you had to find jobs in the newspaper. little job in the back of the newspaper that said scientist. I'm like, oh, I'm a scientist. I can have that job. But also started studying astrology. And I studied tropical astrology. Now, bless my teacher at the time, she did actually teach us about the archetypal energy behind the planets and the stars. And at that point, I didn't become an astrologer, like ripe old age of 21, following the pathway of an environmental scientist.
Yeah.
I think I was too young to become an astrologer at that point.
Yeah.
But what I did was I followed the planets. So what's interesting with tropical astrology, even though it doesn't correlate, and I'll explain this a bit later, correlate with the stars that you can see, the planets as they move and dance together in their beautiful spiral, that was correct. And that's what I followed for 20 years. And then I studied yoga in 2016. And then my life sort of collapsed a little bit and I met you. But not because I met you.
I'm happy to hear that. Although I would not be surprised, because sometimes it's not a bad thing, hey?
So in 2017, we kind of almost lost everything that we'd worked for. But what we actually realised at that point was we'd gone really far off track. And I say we, that's my husband and I. Yeah. We'd gone really far off track to our values and what it is we wanted in this life.
Yeah.
And we had to have that moment. We had to have that. Really reduces you to what is the most important thing that you want in this life. And the two of us would just kept repeating bush and beach, bush and beach.
Yeah.
And the realization for me at that point was that I had become really disconnected from environmental Kelly, that she wanted trees around her, that she wanted to be immersed in the environment all the time, that the fast pace of the city wasn't beneficial for me. And at the same time, I was studying the intuitive intelligence method, of course, because when you hit rock bottom, you're clearing out a lot of resistances and fears and emotions. And that gave me an additional technique to help come out of that and realize, actually, I'm 14-year-old Kelly, that still loves the environment and that still basically wants to be a witch and just working with the environment and being connected to it. And then it took a couple of years working with yoga, working with intuitive intelligence, and I was still tracking astrology. There was never any thought in my mind that it was going to become part of my service. And what's interesting, and I'll raise this now, is, you know, you were saying we've got to move away from the trinkets and the superstitions of the new age. Yeah. And I could see astrology, Western astrology, and I'm only talking about Western astrology here, it was really predictive. And I felt that. And, of course, it was like, oh, well, why am I drawn to it? But I know there's this predictive element to it that's not necessarily beneficial for us.
Yeah.
Right? It might be beneficial for a glimmer and a moment in time. It's not really teaching people the power that they hold and the power that the archetypal energies that the planets and the environment holds for us to use with our own healing, right?
Yeah.
So I sat with that. And then, of course, you know, you get a bit of a knock on the door in your subconscious. It's like, no, actually, you need to take another look at astrology and start to integrate it back into your service. And I did that, and I started down the pathway with tropical astrology, only to have one of my first two clients, one of them asked me a great question. She said, Kelly, what does it mean when the sun is in, let's say, Capricorn? Scientist Kelly, well, it means like that's where the sun is, and that's you would observe it in that constellation. My other client, who is also an environmental scientist, says to me, she goes off, comes back a few days later within the program that we were doing together. But Kelly, I got an astronomy almanac and it doesn't match.
Wow. Talk about getting what you needed, like right there. Oh my
like my God. First three clients, like I was like, I sat there and I was, why didn't I not know this from my astrology training, for one? I was like, why didn't I know this?
Yeah.
So then it was on a, I was on a mission to find out what all that meant. So I had to go back into how astrologers calculate what they're looking at. I had to go back into the nuts and bolts. It's quite mathematical. I'm not going to bore everyone with that today. But essentially, the difference between tropical astrology, which is 90 to 99% of Western modern day, and I would call it pop astrology, doesn't correlate to what you can see in the sky. And I think that's a problem because our beautiful sky is an opportunity for us to connect to our environment. We should be absolutely observing it just like our ancestors did. Multiple traditions have had sky connection practices. You know, the Homo sapiens, the species before us, there is archaeological record that demonstrates that they were observing the moon and the sun. So they were performing astronomy then, before our species. That's like, it's ancient. So we are absolutely allowed to have a connection with our sky. But I think what tropical astrology does, it removes us from the environment, and we've got to stop doing that because it's killing us.
But, okay, so tell me, why, how did that happen? How did we end up, the majority of the planet, following misinformation or, you know what it's reminding me of, that satirical film, Don't Look Up? It's like, let's pretend the planets are somewhere other than where they are actually observable at this point in time. How did that happen?
So astrology, the, of course, it occurred and started before writing. So I had to go back into history. I've gone back. I've had to go back and back and back into history to find out what has occurred. Where has this shift happened? So I went back into history, of course, looked at the ancient archaeology, and then writing took off in around 2600 BCE. And the Babylonians were the ones that really took off in relation to astronomy. And they were using the cuneiform language. These priests, and what I would really dearly love there to have been priestesses, but I'm not so sure, would record what they observed in the sky, and they called them the moving stars in relation to the fixed stars. So the moving stars were the planets, and the fixed stars are the stars behind the planets. So they were recording those. So that's astronomy, right? When you're looking to the sky and you're recording how planets are behaving or what the stars are doing, that's astronomy. Then, of course, they would make predictions and provide information to the culture and the society that they were within. Because, of course, that culture and society, the Babylonian society on the Euphrates River, which is in Iraq, they were very much wedded to their environment. They needed to know when it rained, to plant crops. When they had a full moon come, you know, that's more light. They can, it's not hot. They can go out and plant things and do things. You know, they would have celebrations and rituals were timed around what they were receiving from the sky. But the core point of that is that the astronomy and the astrology were linked. And they were practicing what they were being guided to by the sky. And a beautiful book that books that I've been using by Nicholas Campion, he calls it completely cosmological society. And I just love that because the Magis, as Magis, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, they were deeply wedded in how society and culture functioned. And they were connected with their environment. And that's the point I'm getting to, is that astrology at the moment lost its way because it removed itself from the environment. So where did it remove itself from the environment? Why did we stop doing that? The Babylonians didn't know the earth wobbled. They had no idea. They didn't even know the earth was round at that point. They were just observing. And we can still do that today. So, of course, then you had Egyptians, the Egyptian pantheon of gods came in, gods and goddesses. They were very much linked to the planets as well. Then the information was shared as well. Then the Greeks came in. Again, you've got the pantheon of gods and goddesses. And their form of astrology, the Hellenistic form of astrology, was starting to develop. At the same time, that Western philosophy was taking off. So Western thought theory was taking off around this time. And it was bleeding into also then the Roman Empire was starting to come up. And of course, the bigger the empire you have, the more you want to control it. So you need things to control it. And of course, they could potentially control it by saying, you know, the eclipse is going to do this and it's going to cause the empire to fall, right? So there was all that sort of stuff that was happening. But there was also at the same time, you've got Christianity is starting to pick up, right? So you've got Western thought theory picking up, so science and analytical thought theory picking up, and you've got Christian thought theory picking up. And they're all arguing amongst each other, which is the right way and the only way. So again, humans getting together and being reducing things instead of thinking, well, maybe we can all coexist together.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like at that point around 0 CE and up to about 400 CE when Catholicism, Christianity sort of really started taking off was where they started to say metaphysical practices needed to be eliminated. You know, you weren't allowed to practice augury by the stars in early Christian days. The Bible includes astrology. Jesus was met by three magi, the three priests from Babylon. They were the astrologers. What did they follow? They followed Jupiter, the biggest star in the sky. So you have astrology in the Bible, but progressively they were saying, no, 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 you can't do astrology. And then Western Europe gets plunged into the Dark Ages because the monks are the only ones that are allowed to read and write. And then it's that's the golden era of the Middle East and India, where their thoughts really take off, but we're plunged into the Middle Ages, so we lose information. Yeah. And Ptolemy had mapped the stars. And then we come out, there's a golden age of astrology sort of comes back, but I think it was kind of like Chinese whispers.
Oh, yeah.
And somewhere along the line, they just went and fixed us and said, they fixed the globe and said, no, we don't wobble. And the stars and the planets revolve around us.
Oh my God. So Western astrology is a bit like being a flat earther.
Like, kind of.
Oh my God. This is revelatory. And it just like, okay, so does this, first of all, wow, that is an incredible potted history. And I'm so grateful to hear it because I knew none of that. But how much more frustrating must it be for you then to be seeing 95% of the world caught up in flat earth astrology, which is now what I'm going to call it.
Well, it is really frustrating because of course everyone's very wedded to their identity of their zodiac sign.
Yes.
I get lots of people saying, oh no, that's absolutely not me. And I'm like, that's interesting because you've just heard stories of pop astrology. Have you really explored that archetypal quality of your sun? So the sun has an archetypal energy of the creator. Like if you think about our sun, just in the capacity of being our sun, it gives us all the light and warmth. If it was not there, we wouldn't be here. There's a quality to that, and that's within us because we were created the same time the sun was created. When the universe started to cool down and we started to coalesce into planets and the sun, right? So the sun controls our circadian rhythms. We are deeply wedded to the sun. But then people saying that I'm only this one identity and I can't possibly go and inquire about another archetypal quality leaves me a bit aghast because I'm like, wow, You can't sort of go and explore a different quality. Perhaps there's something in that different archetype for you. Perhaps your resistance to meet it is a fear that you need to look at.
Yeah, I love that. And we know that what people so often seek out these, spiritual things for comfort. They want to just one and done, black and white, tell me who I am and I'll get on with fulfilling that, right? Rather than opening up to, as you say, a curious investigation of the many layers and facets of my nature and my soul nature. I want to ask you then, how did you find the alternative, which is sidereal,
sidereal,
sidereal, and how do we know? Like, obviously, this is literally because I can look at the sky, I can see the planets are where it would be. How did you discover that, and how did you start to work with it?
So my initial thoughts was I was just going to go back to astronomy because the history had said astronomy and astrology were one and the same thing for a very long period of time. So I was like, well, I'll just do the astrology using the astronomy. But then, of course, I found that there were astrologers that had also discovered that this was wrong. And of course, they're, at the moment, they're the minority, but I'd like to change that. So I found out that there were this group of sidereal astrologers. Now, the word sidereal is a derivative of an Italian word called Sidus, and Sidus referred to stars. So it is the reference of the planets with the backdrops of the stars. Sidereal astrology is really simple. You just described it. You can look at the heavens, and God bless our modern technological age, which has given us a vast quantity of information that we should not negate and put over there. It's part of our analytical intelligence that we're allowed to embrace with our intuitive intelligence.
Yes.
And use our astronomy app to go, oh, look, that's where Leo is. And oh, the moon's in Leo today. It's not in Virgo, because that's what the problem was with tropical astrology, is they've taken out the wobble of the Earth's axis. The Earth wobbles. It's like a spinning top. And that causes the vernal equinox to shift. So the vernal equinox is the spring equinox in the Northern Hemisphere. And that's where all astrologers start their zero point from on their chart. So if your zero point is constantly shifting, that means that your chart is constantly shifting, right? So that makes things a bit complicated. Oh, gosh, can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Have to fix it. So tropical astrologers have fixed it to 0 degrees Aries. Now, there's a reason for that. They have linked it to the seasons in the Northern Hemisphere, but that's restrictive.
Yeah.
You know, we're not in the Northern Hemisphere. Our seasons are completely different to those seasons.
Yeah.
So, and then the other factor when you look at the sky is the zodiacs are much bigger than just 30 degrees. So Virgo, for example, is over 40, is 45 degrees, takes up 45 degrees of the sky. So it was a bit of research, but I found it. And then I also had to go back and make sure and understand what the astrology programs were doing. So the function of an astrology program is to help you plot the chart and make sure that you are doing it from the zero point now. So the vernal equinox now is in Pisces, about 8-9 degrees Pisces. It's not at 0 degrees Aries. So that's how I discovered it.
Oh, it is. I am just amazed and shocked. It's like all the climate deniers and the, like, everybody is running around, and you know how much I get off on this stuff because I believe that so much of the new age is bullshit because we are following outdated, incorrect, you know, information that is denying science, is denying the fact that, as you say, you said it so beautifully, analytical and intuitive intelligence work together, not as enemies. Yeah. And yet it's so entrenched in a religious kind of way, the devotion to, you know, tropical astrology. God bless you. It's kind of like trying to take down Catholicism. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, how are you, how, I mean, and I guess the thing is everybody's doing the best they can with what they've got. But often when we're presented with new information, when we feel comfortable in ourselves, we'll take up that new information. But clearly it ain't happening with astrology.
I think it's because, well, there's a couple of reasons. One is, of course, people have established businesses founded on tropical astrology. And they might have very big followings and things like that. So the counter to that is when I've introduced it and dropped bombs in groups, they say that's a hoax. That's been demonstrated to be a hoax. And I went back and I had a look at some of where people have thought it was a hoax. And it was the way NASA had worded their reply that people were like, well, obviously NASA has confirmed that it's that's a hoax. I'm like, no, you're not reading what NASA said correctly. NASA said they haven't added a zodiac into the constellations. That's all they said.
Yeah.
Because the zodiac was always there. They didn't add it.
Yeah.
It's the astrologers who took it away.
Yeah.
Back when they decided around the same time that Catholicism was growing to remove women from the Bible, to take women out of culture and society, the high positions in culture and society, because apparently they were too emotional and they couldn't, you know, they bleed every month. You know, God, how can we deal with that, right? So it was the same thing. A lot of the metaphysicists and the healers were astrologers as well, and they were women. And so to do that, I'm talking patriarchy here, that's what happened. And one of the constellations, Ophiuchus, I won't make you say that one because it took me about 6 months to say it properly. It's a constellation that the ecliptic runs through. The ecliptic is where the Earth revolves around the sun. And it's the snake handler. So it's a man that appears to be holding a snake. It sits between Scorpio and Sagittarius.
Yeah.
So Scorpio is about the descent into the underworld. It's about the descent into our shadow. So when we go in there, we either get stuck in there and we don't come out, but those of us that do, we're vulnerable. And we move out and we move into a Ophiuchus, and we're like a snake that's got a new skin and we're having to be held in our vulnerability. But there's a sense of healing in that as well. And if we go through that healing process and we embrace whatever wounds or trauma that we've got, but we don't let it dictate us moving forward, and our skin hardens after being to the underworld, sitting in our vulnerability, and then we move into Sagittarius. And Sagittarius, we start to feel liberated. We start to be curious and we start to go, wow, there's actually more to this world than me just either sitting in my basement
yeah.
or my vulnerability.
Yeah.
And that in-between stage, that's Ophiuchus.
Yeah.
And that got deleted because a lot of women sat there and held people in their vulnerability.
Wow.
And funnily enough, you look at the medicine logo, for a doctor's logo, it has the snake.
Yes, yeah.
They were known as the healers.
Yeah.
And that zodiac got deleted.
Oh, my goodness. So it's so big. It's so big because what does it
so
mean?
Big.
You know, for a human consciousness, obviously not everybody follows astrology, but lots of people do, whether casually or like seriously, as in what am I going to do with my day or my week or my month because of what the information is. What does it do to a planetary consciousness when we are being told incorrect information about who and what we are? Like, what is the repercussions of that?
Well, I think we can see the repercussions of that.
Yeah.
We have ecological collapse. We have, in the Western world, white man domination. We have billionaires basically hoarding wealth
yeah.
and removing freedom for many, many people. What I'm most interested in is the ecological destruction that's occurring, because if the Earth doesn't survive, and this is why I keep screaming at people, it's like that movie, Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
If the Earth doesn't survive, we don't. It doesn't matter how much money you have.
Yeah.
If the Earth does not survive, we don't. And we need to come back into this ecological connection. We need to come back into our environmental intelligence. And astrology is a portal to do that. So you can look at the moon, you can look at the sun. It allows you to start to realize, oh, I am a part of this system. I'm not separate from it, because that's what happened. We've been separated from it. Tropical astrology continues to separate us from it because it's not looking at the actual sky. It's not saying I'm part of that cyclic nature.
Yeah.
And I can come back into that beautiful ecological connection. Like you said, people can look at the moon and how do I feel? Okay, I look at the moon phase. How do I feel today? What am I going to do with my day? Oh, is there something that is feeling a bit gunky that maybe I need to go and do something? Do I need to go and move my body? Do I need to go and walk in the bush? Do I need to meditate?
Yeah.
That's how you can use astrology. That's applied yeah. astrology. So you're not saying the moon is going to tell me I feel shit today, or the moon is going to tell me I feel great today. Sorry, I swore.
No, I swear. Go
down. You know, so you can use the moon or any planet or any part of astrology as a form of inquiry to examine where you're at. So I just explain, like, perhaps you were feeling, let's say this morning, I had a feeling of not enoughness.
Yeah.
And, you know, you cycle through this sometimes. And I made up my practices and I sat with it. And then you receive information and you realize, actually, I'm just sitting in a rubbish story. I am the whole goddamn universe that is still expanding in human form.
Yeah.
Right? How can I not be enough?
Yeah.
So it starts to become a nice fluid practice where, one, you can use it as a practice tool, or if you're feeling a particular way, it's a form of reflection.
Yeah.
So, and of course, it's ever changing, and it allows you to look at the moon and the night sky, and you step into this amazing feeling called awe. And there's been plenty of studies, clinical studies on awe that has demonstrated when people go into an awe field, in particular natural environment, they connect with that essence of something bigger. They start going, oh, I'm part of something that's much bigger. It's not just my little individualistic needs. It's not just my, oh, I need to make more money, or I need a new car, or I need a house. Oh, actually, it's more than that. And that's that stepping into consciousness, that feeling. That's what I think awe does.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. The awe field. I love that.
Yeah, the awe field.
Yeah. And it's so true. You know, it's those peak experiences that dissolve the ego so that there is only that sense of inherent interconnectedness. And yes, looking at the stars is one of the most astonishing ways to do that. And I'm so moved by what you're sharing, because if archetypally we have been taught a way of knowing ourselves that is disconnected to what we are observing, just as we are inhabiting a planet as though it is infinite and unlimited and abusing it as though it is, you know, going to keep on giving to us forever, you can just understand so much about why everything that we're doing is baseless and built on this lie. You know, and I don't think it's overstating that. The other thing I want to touch on is that you are an environmentalist, you are a huge advocate for the mother and for this planet. And like the sidereal astrology, I'm just going to keep saying it wrong just because clearly that's where my brain's at. I've seen how much you've shared and I love watching your posts, but do you often feel like you're just screaming into the void when it comes to trying to get people to take more responsibility for their environmental impact?
Oh, all the time. But what can I do? I'm still going to travel with a word called hope. Lots of environmental activists and all sorts of other activists, they have to have at the core of their heart hope. And alongside that is courage, because I don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. So you've got to have the courage to keep going. But what I do know is humans are amazing. And we have done amazing, amazing things. And I'm not willing to give up the hope that we can't change things. And if enough people raise their vibration through all the amazing tools that there are, mine, one of them, but also intuitive intelligence and all the other amazing tools that are calling us back into our own deep connection with our intuitive intelligence, our emotional intelligence, our analytical intelligence, our environmental intelligence, making sure that our body, you know, is receiving this information in a clear manner, then we can imagine a new world. Because for God's sake, look what we've already done.
Yeah.
You know, we can change. Because we have overcome surmountable things before. Yeah. And I think that that's what astrology can help people see, is that, one, there's beauty and awe and imagination. And you then get to step into awe and imagination and your intuition and start to share their message and their light and imagination and creativity and expression and start to speak our new world into reality and start to create our new world into reality. So that's basically why I won't shut up.
Thank God for that, my darling. Thank God for that. But yeah, I really do bow to you, because You know, I was interviewing another sister, Sinead Carey, about this. You know, if you know what the Institute stands for. We do not stand for the trinkets and superstitions of the New Age, but it would be so easy for you and for her and for me, for all of us, to just take the more popular path, give people what they think they want, make a ton of money and go home. But you are an activist on the front line. You are a, you know, a genuine thought leader and a game changer. But what you're sharing is so fucking logical and reasonable. It's
exactly.
Like you have to scream above the illusion of the emperor's new clothes to get to, you know, stuff that should just be painfully obvious. And, you know, I'm grateful for movies like Don't Look Up because they help in some ways comfort me to understand that there is more than just a few of us on the planet who are like, how are we not taking responsibility for this stuff?
And that's what I think the movie Don't Look Up is wonderful, because if we have creatives of that caliber starting to share at that level, then we can all follow them as well. And I'm hearing a groundswell in subcultures where a lot more movies and books are going to be speaking more about things that lift us up, like creating art that lifts us up to see what else is possible. And I think that that's what you talk about. That's what I talk about. And we're going to keep going because that's what we're called here to do.
Yeah.
Because a lot of art up until this point has been, you know, all the superhero movies, someone flies in and rescues us. That's not happening. There's no superheroes coming to rescue you, but you can absolutely rescue yourself and you can get to have a really heap of fun and joy and curiosity doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where creativity can start to deliver the world that we really want to see. And we just need a groundswell of people to do it, to keep doing it. So
I love that.
I'll be there at the back going, this way, everyone, this way.
Oh, I think you're there at the front, my darling. And I'm so grateful for that. And yeah, I would love to ask a few more personal questions so we can get to know you a little bit as well. What do people misunderstand about you?
I'm not really sure, because maybe they don't share their opinion with me, but I think that they probably think that I have two heads when I tell them that I'm a scientist and an astrologer initially. Like they're like, how are those two things related?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how to answer that question. Perhaps people don't interact with me that I scare off with my energy fields initially.
I think those two things we often think of as competing, like being spiritual and a scientist. Yeah. We often see them as separate, but you and I are very committed to bringing them into the same conversation. This conversation has demonstrated that. What are you reading right now?
I finished reading Astrophysics for People That Don't Have Time. And so if people want to understand our universe, go read that by Neil deGrasse Tyson. And it's really entertaining, and it's not a big book, right? Then the next book I'm going to start, and I've started reading it, is Indigenous Astronomy. And it's written by an astrophysicist with Australian First Nation elders.
Wow.
And how they looked at the sky and their myth and their stories in relation to the sky and the science in those stories. See, this is what people are forgetting. Myth is not just a fancy story that you listen to. It's got meaning in it.
Yeah.
And so I'm starting to read that book and I'm excited about that.
Wonderful. Yeah. And there's, as you say, that stargazing and making understanding consciousness through the stars is ancient practice. And I remember, years ago when I first moved to Melbourne, I heard an Indigenous Australian woman, I think her name's Marie Andrews or Matia Andrews, and she wrote Seven Sisters, and it was speaking about looking at the, you know, the Seven Sisters of the Pleiades and understanding the storytelling from an Indigenous perspective, but how, as you say, it's anchored in observations that are highly accurate and highly technical. And yes, they then use the imagination and storytelling to help us understand our nature, but the observations are as scientific as anything that we would do today. And, you know, we know this is a massive area. Like you know, I think about people like Graham Hancock, who were some of my first introduction to understanding how the ancient pyramids and other structures were assembled around, you know, the constellations. And it's a huge, huge rabbit hole, but I love that there is so much knowledge for us to access that can take it beyond that trinket and superstition that just helps us opt out, bypass, and deny as a way of, you know, not having to take responsibility for our lives and instead be something that, as you say, connects us. All right, if today was the last day on earth for you, my darling, what would you want us to know?
That you are still an exploding universe, and that you are a unique and sacred part of that singularity that occurred billions of years ago, and that this beautiful vessel that we're riding through consciousness on is also alive and divine, and we're part of it. We are it.
Yeah. Jema, thank you. I knew this conversation was going to be glorious because whenever I get to spend time with you, it is so inspiring and humbling and warm. And I really would love for you to consider putting all of this knowledge that you have into a book. Yes, it relates to the to astrology, but this broader context of understanding of human evolution and consciousness evolution, you are such a master at helping us understand. And I really hope you've got that on your to-do list, putting it all together.
It's on my to-do list. Yeah. It started. I've just now got to get into it, don't I?
You do. You need any accountability. You just call me. I will make sure that it happens, because I think what you're saying is so big, it's so far beyond, you know, and I'm not belittling astrology in any way, but it's so far beyond even that. It's returning us to wholeness and holiness through understanding our infinite nature. And I really just bow to you, because I see you have chosen a very, very big path with this life.
I didn't choose it. I keep getting pulled that way.
Yes, it chose you, but you had the courage to say yes, and I really honor you for that.
Thank you. Thanks for today. It's been delightful.
Thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll share all of the references that Kelly's made along with all of the ways that you can find her in the show notes for this episode. We'll see you very soon.
In 2022, the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence is bringing you a whole new way to get qualified as a professional intuitive. The Intuitive Intelligence Method Accreditation is a 100-hour training program, including personal development, professional development, and spiritual development, that will take your skills as an intuitive to the level of superconscious. This program is available online and in person across a range of different dates and deliveries in 2022 and 2023. We'd love for you to head to the instituteforintuitiveintelligence.com to find out more about how you can get qualified faster and more efficiently to increase your power to serve.